It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
So in this week's episode of the Untold Story podcast, I'm honored to be joined by World War II veteran George Ciampa, and also today by Roger Kilfoyle, and Stephanie is also joining us, and they are taking a really special journey. We have spent a lot of time over the past several years talking about World War II and digging into stories of the incredible heroism and the long-lasting relationships that were forged during that very trying time and that battle for freedom and the battle over tyranny, which both George and Roger have encountered in different ways over the course of their own lives. So let's start there, George. Just give everybody just a very brief sort of thumbnail sketch of you and your experience, you know, where you fought in World War II.
Okay. I'll try to make this short because I know we have limited time. But I'm George Ciampa. I was a 112-pound, 18-year-old soldier in World War II. I served in 5 campaigns in France, Belgium, and Germany, including the D-Day invasion and the Battle of the Bulge. Battle of the Bulge was the largest land battle the U.S. Army ever fought, and it was in freezing cold weather. I was a member of the 607th Graves Registration Company, which was comprised of 124 enlisted men and officers. Our job was to gather the dead from the battlefields in harm's way most of the time, and we buried them in mattress covers. We did everything except dig the graves. We had others doing that. Thank God for that. We did that every day for 11 months, from D-Day until the end of the war on May 8th, 1945. We initiated 17 temporary cemeteries in France, Belgium, and Germany, handling over 75,000 bodies, that's American and German. So after the war, I was assigned to the Army of Occupation in Mannheim, Germany for 7 months before going home in January of 1946. So then I had a chance to chill out.
Mm. Your story is so extraordinary. I can't imagine that I don't know if there's anyone living today who went through all of the battles, the significant, most significant battles really of World War II in the European theater, who can say that he witnessed what you witnessed, sir. So we are so indebted to you and to the fact that you have really spent so much of your life remembering the people that you helped to bury and making sure that their memory is not lost, which we all know is too prevalent in this country. So Roger's also with us. Roger, you also faced a horrific day in your life. Give everybody just a quick, you know, just as George did, just a quick sketch of who you are.
I am a Marine Corps veteran, and when I got out of the Marine Corps, I became a New York City firefighter, and then I spent my time at Ground Zero, and I paid my dues, and worked hard to recover our victims and their bodies, and as part of my therapy for myself, I had volunteered to be a guardian to bring some World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. And I fell in love with that mission, and that brought Stephanie and I together. And for the past 15 years, we have been working with the World War II veteran community. And some of the highlights of that were us bringing 28 World War II veterans to the World War II Museum in New Orleans. We bring veterans to Europe to document and retrace their battlefield advances. And during one of those trips to Europe, we went to the Margraten, the National Netherlands and American Cemetery in Margraten, and we learned about the grave adoption program, where each of the 10,000 graves and names on the Wall of the Missing adopted by Dutch citizens. And found this to be an amazing story. And back in 2018, Stephanie and I decided we would return to Margraten and recognize the grave adoption families. And that was the impetus for starting Mission Margraten.
Yeah. You know, I just wanted, Stephanie, just tell everybody who you are, because I want everyone to know who, you know, they can hear you, you know, sort of chiming in. And so tell us quickly your story, your connection to all of this.
Well, Roger and I met in 2003. I was working for a nonprofit that was taking care of 9/11 firemen and their families. And so in 2003, we met. And due to circumstances, we only recently started to see each other. We are a couple, and that started in 2014. And by the time we met and were able to be together, he was already involved in taking World War II veterans to Washington, D.C. with Honor Flight Long Island. And the first trip that I went with him, I fell in love with our guys. And I think when we were driving home, because we live in Brooklyn, we kind of thought this can't just be the only time we see our guys. Mm-hmm. We grew to be friends with them, met their families. And we thought that twice a year to be among these great people was not enough for us. And so we started branching out on our own and doing things that meant the world to us. And we're here today talking to you because World War II veterans really are a huge part of our lives.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And I understand your experience from my own experience writing my book on Known Valor and going to Iwo Jima and flying there with a number of veterans who had fought there. And it's just an extraordinary, you feel like you know these great men so quickly because they're so open and so accessible. And it's just a really special bond. So I can very easily understand why you want more of that in your life and you want the ability to make sure that other people are aware of it as well. George, can you tell everyone, give us a little history lesson about what happened at Margraten?
Oh, let me tell you about that. Yes, I actually was involved with a Henri Chapelle Cemetery, which is in Belgium, very close to the Netherlands border. And we had buried 17,300 American heroes in that temporary cemetery, Henri Chapelle, which is now just about 8,000 graves. And I'll explain why if you want to hear about that. But Margraten, I've been there a number of times on my trips back to Europe to do my documentaries. You know, Martha, I did 6 documentaries over 13 years in France, Belgium, and Germany. And so I have met the superintendents of that cemetery at Margraten. I learned a lot about it, the fact that there's 8,300 American soldiers, heroes buried there. And the Dutch people are amazing people because they've had an adoption program going there ever since the beginning, at the end of the war, is what I should say. But these Dutch citizens were adopting graves in temporary cemeteries at first. And then when the permanent cemetery was built 2 years after the war, they continued to adopt graves so that every one of those 8,300 graves was adopted a long time ago, plus the 1,700 missing in action names on the columns there. Now, when a family adopts a grave, they call that soldier their soldier. And they've done that at the Henri Chapelle Cemetery also, but not to the great extent that they have at Margraten. The Dutch people are certainly amazing people.
It's an extraordinary, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. I just want to make sure that people sort of, if you could just back up for a moment and explain the battles, the what happened to liberate that area that made these people, that made the Dutch so in debt, so in gratitude for what our American soldiers had done for them and Marines.
Well, I didn't serve in the Netherlands. I served in Belgium, you know, during the Battle of the Bulge, which is very close. You know, there's 3 cemeteries that are very close to each other, 2 in Belgium and the one in the Netherlands. I was not involved with the fighting in the Netherlands. I wasn't involved with burying any of those soldiers in temporary graves because we were too busy with the Henri-Chapelle Cemetery in Henri-Chapelle, which is a small village there in Belgium. We were there from September of 44 to January 45. All I can tell you, Martha, about that is we were at the temporary Henri-Chapelle Cemetery. We were almost encircled by the Germans when they broke through for the Battle of Bulge. And it was freezing cold weather for a month and a half from December 16th until January 25th of the next year. So I know an awful lot about what happened there in Belgium and how close we got to being encircled. In fact, our company got the Army's Meritorious Unit Award for staying there along with the medics. We're the only ones that stayed, the medics and graves registration people. And one thing I'd like to say, Martha, is that medics and graves registration people know the high price of freedom. That's what I have concentrated on in all my films, because I sought the high price of freedom. Did I ever get PTSD? No, and I explain why in my recent book called Silent Dog Tags that you can get at Amazon. I talked about my memoirs of the war when I was out of the service for a couple of years, and I didn't do anything with it until now. So my memoirs are in Silent Dog Tags. I like to talk about this because I think about the young men that gave their lives. I saw so many of them. It was difficult for me to look at them. I broke down one day. The lieutenant stuck a gun in my ribs and said, "You get your ass back out there." And I never got PTSD. I didn't even know what PTSD was. We had battle fatigue, and we were not, there was a war going on. We had to keep going and going. You couldn't get any kind of psychiatric treatment or psychology. I did see a psychologist once when I couldn't stand up during the Battle of Bulge. When I got off the ground, I couldn't stand up. I had to go on sick call in a truck in the freezing weather and the snow, and saw a psychologist who asked me if I liked the Army and if I had a girlfriend and blah, blah, blah. And I almost hit the guy and got the heck out of there. But that's the way the war was. I mean, there was no way anybody could be babied. I mean, we had to go and go and go and win the war. And our job, as I said, we gathered almost 75,000 dead bodies. It was very, very tough on me. Mm. As a little boy, I had a huge fear of death because of a few things that happened in the family with death. And so I tried to get in the Air Corps and flunked because my eyes weren't good enough, and I got put as a replacement in the 607th Graves Registration Company, going overseas with all the guys who are older than I. I was the youngest one. Yes, Martha, there's only one person that I know of in my company that's still living, and he's up in Northern California, another Italian like me. and I understand there's a couple of Italians going on this Margraten trip. And correct me if I'm wrong, Roger, but I think one or two of them are 100-year-old Italians.
Yeah, I'm right? Looking at, I see Bruno Gallerano. Gallerano, I hope I'm saying his name correctly. Let's hear a little bit about this mission and the people who are going on it. And as you say, I think, well, George, you're 96, if I'm correct, sir.
I'll be 97 in 3 weeks.
Okay, you and Queen Elizabeth are on the same schedule, it sounds like. So you have one of them. Roger is. Two people are 100, I believe, who are making this trip from the United States to Margraten, and one is 101, Roger?
Well, sadly, one of our oldest veteran is just pulled out. But we do have Dominic Critelli, one of our veterans, is 101 years old. He is still plays the saxophone and conducts. He is a lot of fun. And we have known Dominic for 4 or 5 years and helped him celebrate his 100th birthday with a drive-by parade. And he is just one of the exciting and interesting men and Rosie the Riveter that will be on our trip.
So are all of these, how many people are going and what is their, tell us about, you know, their background. Were they in, you know, what's their connection to Margotten, and why are they taking this trip?
Well, each of them are taking the trip so that they can visit some of the graves of their buddies at the Margotten Cemetery. Mm-hmm. But them will be recognizing the grave adoption family that has adopted men from their units or from their branch of service. So there is a connection between the gratitude that American families have for the grave adoption family for bringing them comfort, as well as the gratitude the Dutch people have for American fighting men for liberating their country. Mm-hmm. So it is a unique connection between the gratitude we hold for the grave adoption families and the gratitude the Dutch people have for their American liberators.
The Untold Story continues right after this.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that you all know all too well. But just to mention to people who are listening to this, so for so many of these young men who lost their lives there, they never went home. And I just want everyone to think about that for a moment, because I obviously there were thousands of bodies that did go home on ships from the Pacific and from the European theater, but a lot of them did not. And so, and even
can I explain that, Martha?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the first time I went back was 50 years later, thanks to my fiance. My late wife had passed away in 1981, and I raised my kids for 10 years. But that's another story. But what happened when I went back there? I walked amongst the graves alone at first at Normandy. I wondered, did I handle that particular body? Mm-hmm. You see, all those bodies were buried in temporary graves before they got to the permanent cemetery in Normandy. So I handled a lot of those bodies. And so I looked at the monuments, the white marble monuments at each grave, and I saw that there was no date of birth, and I just went ballistic. I thought, oh, my God. I walked back to my fiance and my kids, who were then 22 and 23, I said, there's no date of birth. People walking through here have no idea how old these guys were. So many 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, mm-hmm. I know because I handled them. And so I talked to the ABMC, that's the American Battle Monuments Commission, who does a very fine job, by the way, building the cemeteries and maintaining them. But I asked them why the date of birth wasn't there, only the date of death, which I knew was approximated many times. And they said, that's the way it was done in World War One. And so they did it same way, blaming the quartermaster at that time. So there's no way that can be corrected. You know, it's all engraved in the marble. And so now what happened after the war, when the permanent cemeteries were built, that was in 1947, the next of kin had the prerogative of having their loved ones' remains sent home to any cemetery they chose at no charge to them, or remained there in the graves. Now, 60% of those who were killed were sent home. So what you're seeing there now, when you see a cemetery with 8,300 or 9,300 or whatever it might be, that represents 40% of what was killed. The other 60% went home. So I get emails all the time of people sending emails showing cemeteries and the number of bodies buried there. And actually, they're alluding to the fact that so many have been killed, and you're looking at these cemeteries where they're buried, which is true but not true, because it's only 40%. Mm-hmm. You got to add another 60% to those cemeteries. People don't know that.
Yeah.
So I like to talk about that as much as I can.
It's a great point, because there's nothing so overwhelming as walking along all of the crosses and monuments at Normandy and seeing the massive number of young men who lost their lives, scaling the cliffs there and then working their way through the farms and the countryside in that area to to liberate it. But as you say, there's more than half of them, those bodies aren't there. They were sent home. So tell me a little bit about, and maybe Roger, you want to take this, or Stephanie, sure. Just sort of some, you know, who is making this trip? Give us a little sense of maybe one or two individual people and tell us their story.
Sure. Our group is 10 veterans, or should I say 9 veterans and one Rosie the Riveter. 4 of our veterans are Army veterans that fought in theater. And one of our veterans was airman. The one of our veterans was with the Army Air Corps with a Tuskegee Airman, and he was an airplane mechanic that kept the planes flying during the York campaign. One of our veterans, a Navy veteran, who fought in the Mediterranean and the Atlantic, sinking a German U-boat in 1944. We have 3 other Navy veterans that fought in the Pacific Theater Campaign, and one Rosie the Riveter.
Tell us about Rosie the Riveter. Tell us about her. What's her name?
I'm going to have Stephanie tell you about Rosie the Riveter.
Well, her real name is May Cryer, and she's quite an inspiration. She's definitely very energetic and very inspirational. She actually petitioned, May Cryer is the Rosie the Riveter who petitioned Congress to get a Rosie the Riveter Day and to get, I think, ultimately a Rosie the Riveter Month put on the calendar. So she's a very strong, determined woman still. And when she found out about this trip, because she wasn't part of our original, she was very gung-ho about joining us, and she's been an asset to us.
How old is she?
I think she's 97.
These people are extraordinary. Go ahead.
She helped B-17s and the B-29s that flew. And she's very proud of what she did, and she should be. And she wears her Rosie the Riveter colors, her bandana, and the white and the red and white polka dots everywhere in her outfit, so she stands out. And
that's
she
great.
Should.
Georgia,
do we know where she worked?
Yeah, she worked in Washington at the Boeing factory.
Oh,
yes,
wow. In Washington State. Yeah.
Yes.
That's,
so let me just add one quick thing here.
Yeah, please.
Why am I going? I've been there a number of times doing my films and other times as well, and have good friends in France and Belgium. But anyway, I'm going because I know the people of the Netherlands. I'm talking about the southern part of the Netherlands, now Holland, Limburg. These people, what they have been doing over all of these years, Their duty is to put flowers on the graves from time to time. They don't maintain the graves. The ABMC does that. They built the cemeteries. They maintain them with local people that they pay to do that, and they do a fantastic job. The only thing I'm upset about is they don't have the date of birth on the markers. Mm-hmm. But I'm going because I want to personally thank these people. I understand that we've got 100 adopters together that were one of the events that we're going to attend with them, and I want to personally shake their hands and thank them for what they're doing, because it means a lot to me. It really does. I mean, I've been there, like I said, I've been there and saw this, and I know so much about a lot of the bodies that are buried there, who they were, what they did, because I'm very involved with the Remember Museum in Belgium and what they have done over the years and how they have adopted 13 soldiers themselves in the Henri Chapelle Cemetery. And they're going to have big ceremonies at all these cemeteries every year. And at the Remember Museum, they put flowers on every grave there on Memorial Day. And they have kids from the schools doing that. But getting back again to the Dutch, I cannot say enough about the Dutch. That's why I want to go. I want to go there and honor them. I understand I'm going to be, when you want to go into that, Roger, what do you have me doing there?
Well, I think we should talk with this little time that we have about one of the great ceremonies that we will be participating in. It'll be our gratitude and peace ceremony at in a community called Mesh. And that first community to be liberated in the Netherlands during World War II. And it's a unique ceremony, and that's where our veterans will present to 100 grave adoption families a piece of marble. And this same marble and the only marble used at American National Cemeteries. Arlington National Cemetery has their headstones made of this marble, and that's the same type of marble we will be sharing with our grave adoption families. We will have our gratitude and peace ceremony where our veterans will hand their the marble to these families. And it's going to serve as a symbol of America's gratitude to the devotion and compassion that the Dutch people hold for their liberators.
It's a beautiful tribute to them. And I just, you know, would mention that in some of these cases, I know, and in some of the cemeteries in France as well, the families who watch over these graves had relationships, letter writing relationships with the American families back home. And they literally were protecting their boys, the children that they lost so far away from home, watched over by the communities and the people of these towns who were so grateful to them, as you all point out. And I think it's an extraordinary mission. I can't wait to see some pictures and to see the film and to see all of what you all can achieve together. And I wish you well on this trip. I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful mission. The Mission Margotten Plus, it's called. World War II veteran, extraordinary individual, George Ciampa, who has spent most of his life protecting our country, protecting Europe from totalitarianism, and then remembering all of these individuals for so many years in such a noble and gracious, a generous way. So George Ciampa and Roger Kilfoyle and Stephanie, I wish you all a wonderful trip, and I thank you so much for joining us on The Untold Story. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Take care.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.